Franchise players are often referred to as the face of the franchise.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Franchise Players here on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, exclusive to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@TobaccoRoadSportsRadio. You can hear the audio version of this every Friday afternoon across the triad on terrestrial radio. WWEG 1470 AM is part of the TGI Friday lineup at 5 p.m. in Greensboro. And if you missed that, the encore on WTOB 980 AM, 96.7 FM in Winston-Salem. I'm your host, Desmond Johnson. Loaded show. Today, we had a lot of stuff that happened over the course of this week in the sports world. We're going to try to touch on all of those things. David Glenn will be in his bi-weekly joint through franchise players in the sports buffet. He'll get it to touch on everything from ACC hoops to the coaching changes around the NFL, Scott Fitter being let go by the Panthers, the general manager, and more. So we'll get with him about that. The homie B-Dot's going to stop through, give us NFL wild card weekend predictions. He's going to pick his picks for all six games over the course of this weekend. We'll get you ready for that as well. But coming in right now is our friend Dimitri Rabanos. I had to, when I found out that Nick Saban was going to step down and retire from the head coaching position at Alabama, the very first name that popped across my head was Dimitri, because Dimitri's one of the biggest Alabama fans I know. What's up, man? What's going on?
I'm good. You are, first of all, I appreciate you checking in on me on Wednesday. You are one of about a dozen people, all from outside of the state of Alabama, by the way, because I know all of my friends back where I grew up are going through their own emotional crisis right now. But yeah, I had plenty of people going, are you okay? Are you okay? And I have to remind everybody, I started saying this was going to happen back in September.
You did. And you reminded me of that because you put it out as a tweet. You were like, hey, I wrote this article like way back in September about this, because I remember reading it. I was like, you know what? He's right. Because I thought about it every time I looked at Nick Saban after I read that article the rest of the year. I kind of looked at him different. Mm-hmm. And I had the same vibes I was getting with Roy Williams his last year, where it was just like, it feels like we're closer to the end than the beginning at this point. Yeah. And what is there left for him to do? Like, if he doesn't win it this year, like, what's left? You know,
exactly.
Like he's already greatest.
And I thought that the way things ended, obviously, you would love to end with a national championship, right? But Nick Saban has seven of them, six at Alabama and one at LSU. I think for a guy like Nick, the storybook ending is more what he got, where he took a team that was incredibly flawed, that each week you could see the improvement. You could see the process playing out, and ultimately they end up as SEC champions. Like, I don't think there's any other way to slice it. Like, this was a successful season. And it is the kind of season that I think he gets the most personal pleasure out of. And so I think he would tell you that this, for him specifically, this was a storybook end.
Yeah, and the way he talked about the players this year, it felt like he was really close to this team in terms of watching the players' individual growth and just seeing them from September to where they got to at the end of the year.
Yeah.
He seemed really proud of this team. So I think he was good going out on this note. And I think he's known all year, to be honest. I think he's known
it's
going to be his year. Same way as Roy. And I'm really happy as a Bama fan. Are you happy he did this like Roy Williams, or would you have preferred him to do it like Coach K, where he has like the farewell tour and everybody knows and he gets the walking chairs and all that stuff?
I mean, personally, I would have preferred to have the farewell tour as a fan, but having watched Nick Saban and paid attention to him for the last 17 years, I'm not surprised at all by the way he did it. Like, I am in fact surprised that he has said that he will be available to the program for whatever kind of guidance, whether it's the next coach or Greg Byrne, the athletic director, whatever sort of guidance they may want. He always struck me as a dude that when he was done, he was going to be gone. You know, he's got that $17 million home down near West Palm Beach on Jupiter Island in Florida that he bought. That, you know, that's for a guy that has been so obsessive about staying close to Tuscaloosa, just in case. Like, to me, that was the big indicator that, okay, something has changed here, and he is ready to go. You know, what you talked about how close and how proud of this team he seemed, I want to make sure you and the listeners understand what I mean here. I think Nick always viewed, obviously he loves the process of coaching more than the actual results. And I think, you know, if you asked him about someone like a Hunter Renfrow or Stetson Bennett, I think Nick would tell you that he could do that pretty easily. He could take a walk on and make them a major contributor to a very good championship level college football team, make them an NFL caliber player, right? I think what Nick loves is the challenge of taking someone like, you know, Caleb Downs is a great example, freshman safety, All-American, coming out of high school, was regarded as one of the best secondary prospects that we've seen in a long, long time. And I think for Nick, the joy is the challenge of taking that guy and finding the flaws and saying, if you can clean X, Y, and Z up, you will go from a 100 to a 110. And I think that he did a little bit of both this year, because Jalen Milroe, by the end of the season, was one of the most dynamic, most reliable offensive forces in the country. But he certainly was not that against Texas. He got benched for the game against South Florida. So I think that he really ran the gamut this year of guys being lifted to whatever their next level happened to be.
Do you, is Nick Saban the reason for present day SEC bias? Cause I was thinking back on this, cause I was like, okay, let's think of the world pre Nick Saban, before he got to Alabama, because
I prefer not.
Yeah, see, and I have friends that are like SEC fans, like the ones that just chant SEC, no matter who it is, which I've never understood. I've never been like a moron. ACC fan. Like, I just cheer for whoever's there.
Listen, I tell people all the time, I've done a lot of work down in South Carolina, so I do have a soft spot for the Gamecocks. But every year I want Alabama to go 12-0. If South Carolina goes 6-6, that's fine. But that's everyone fine. Else, yeah. I need them to go 0-4.
Yeah, exactly. but I see this whole like SEC is king and all this other stuff. And I've always been in the camp. You know me, Dimitri. I've said it before. I've always felt like it's Alabama, someone else. There's usually two teams right below that. And then it's the rest of the league. And I feel like Alabama has been the flag bearer for the SEC for the past 15 years or whatever. Like, the SEC has rode the wave of Alabama basically dominating college football. Is he the reason? Do you feel, because to me, I feel like he is the reason that the SEC is looked at the way they are currently today. How danger is that now with him not there? And it doesn't appear that there was a succession plan, which I'm kind of surprised. If he knew all year that he was going to go, you would think he would have something in place, but it doesn't appear that there's one in place.
Yeah, I don't think he was ever going to betray what his plan was by doing that. And also, you know, I've heard in the last couple of days that Tommy Rees has picked up steam as a candidate. I would argue there was neither of his coordinators were ideal to take over. Rees on offense or Kevin Steele on defense, who also just retired himself from college football. I think that Nick is the reason that that SEC dominance narrative got kicked into overdrive. But it started before. Remember, this started with Florida. 06 before that. Or excuse me, right after that, LSU, then Florida again in 08, and then the Saban run of dominance begins. And the other part, too, that I don't think you can overlook is, let's go back to 2009, or I guess since 2009, when Saban won his first title. Since that time, Alabama has won a title, Auburn has won a title, LSU has won a title. So I don't think you can say that Saban is the only reason. He is definitely the reason that SEC teams did not have patience to catch up to where he was, to where Alabama was. And it's why you've seen, you know, a school like Florida, Urban Meyer leaves the school. And since then, they've had, what, four head coaches?
Yeah.
You know, it seems like there are some schools in the conference, like Mississippi State is another good one. Mississippi State had their guy in Dan Mullen. Mullen left for Florida not that long ago, 5 years ago. And they're on their third coach, or I guess they'll be on their fourth coach, since Dan Mullen, when the new season begins next year. There is a lot. Tennessee has had too many coaches to count in this time frame. Like, he is definitely the reason that good enough was not good enough in the conference anymore.
Do you, you don't think, well, I was thinking about this too. It feels like it follows the same path as like Roy Williams, Coach K, Jim Boeheim, a lot of these like legendary coaches that gotten up in age or whatnot. Almost feels like they got pushed out of the game ahead of when they really wanted to go due to the changes in the college sports landscape, NIL, the portal, league expansion, the SEC is in the middle of all that stuff. Out of those three things, which one of those three things do you think bothered Saban the most? Like, it might have contributed to this decision.
NIL. 100% NIL because I don't think he – look, don't get me wrong. I don't think he loves the portal, right? But I also think that you look at any Alabama loss in the portal, it has not been a significant contributor at all. And in fact, very few of those guys leave Alabama and go on to be big-time contributors to wherever it is they end up. I think what bothers him about NIL, and I'm going to give you a little bit of a history lesson here. Before Nick Saban, the Alabama booster core was internally feuding. They were more worried about who was better than each other than they were about was Alabama better than Auburn, LSU, Florida, et cetera, et cetera. Nick Saban came in, and in 07, Alabama fans know this as the tip of the spear speech. He got all these boosters together, and he said, look, when you go into battle, if there is anything in front of the tip of your spear, you are going to lose. I am the tip of the spear. Nobody is in charge of this program but me. And he did what at the time seemed impossible. He got all of these rich, egotistical Southern men to fall in line behind him. NIL, as long as the NCAA wants to keep up the charade of the schools can't be involved in pain, gives boosters some control over your roster, right? As long as these collectives are run by alumni and by boosters, that is a level of control that the head coach loses. So I don't think he loves the portal, but I don't think player empowerment bothers him. I think that it is the things that take control of the direction of the team away from him that bother him more.
Young Gun podcast host Dimitri Ravina is joining us here on Franchise Players as we talk about the legacy of head coach Nick Saban, who retired this week from the University of Alabama, seven-time national champion, widely considered the greatest head coach, well, college head coach of all time. Who should be the frontrunner? Who do you want? I mean, you're a Bama fan. Is there somebody in particular, like in a dream world, who would you like to see come to Alabama and kind of keep this thing rolling? But who do you who would you like to have, and who do you think is the actual frontrunner?
I mean, if you gave me my choice of anybody, look, I've said all along that Greg Burns should begin by at least calling Kirby Smart and asking, is there anything? We all know the answer is no, right? Like the answer is no. Kirby Smart doesn't need to go to Alabama. He's got Alabama. It just happens to be in Athens, Georgia, right?
As alma mater.
So my attainable dream candidate was Steve Sarkisian. And again, that's not easy because Alabama can call Steve and say, you just tell us the number. And Texas can call Steve and say, we'll give you a blank check and we'll have Houston ship a rocket ship over. Yeah. Like that's not an arms race you are going to easily win. I don't think Sark is off the table. I just don't think it's realistic in terms of who I think it is going to be. I think there is something to the fact that Nick Saban and Kalen DeBoer are represented by the same guy. Washington offered Kalen DeBoer a contract extension a month ago, which he remains unsigned. I think that makes a lot of sense. And but the other part of this, which is would be like a great like, oh, man, isn't that ironic? Last year, before the start of the 2023 season, you know, Bill O'Brien, after 2022, leaves Tuscaloosa to go take over play calling duties with the New England Patriots. Nick Saban's first choice for offensive coordinator was Ryan Grubb. And Ryan Grubb did not leave Washington out of his loyalty to Kalen DeBoer. So the ironic thing is, could Ryan Grubb become the offensive coordinator at the University of Alabama? Just not for Nick Saban. And the other thing I'll say here with DeBoer, he would not have been, he was not even really on my radar for this job. But I do think DeBoer has had a lot of success. None of it has been in the South. He's never coached in the South. That matters. I don't think that's the end-all, be-all, but I do think it matters. But his style of football is going to cure a lot of the early fears of decommits and some of these skill position guys entering the portal because he loves to put up stats. He loves to move that ball around.
Bonus question, because you know you're a Panthers content creator. I couldn't let you out of here without a Panthers question. Well, kind of, sort of. Where will Jim Harbaugh end up next year?
So it's so hard to tell, right? Like we had heard that the Chargers were starting to really like the idea of Jim Harbaugh, but the Chargers will screw it up somehow. And also,
yeah, Yeah,
there is some personality math you have to do with Harbaugh, right? Like, I'm rooting for him to be the Panthers head coach because I think he's Dave Tepper insane enough to quit. Not because I think he's a great coach.
It would be perfect. Like, I mean, at least give me something to sink my teeth into. Like, I've been having to do specific Panther podcasts and things for going on 4 years now, and it's been four losing seasons. So it's like, I feel like we do the same script from beginning of the year to the end of the year. Yeah. We're all optimistic at the beginning of the year. We're wiped by the middle of the year. End of the year, we're doing a coaching search. Like, it's the same thing. And I want, like, just something. Give me some pop. Give me.
I'll tell you the reason that I actually do kind of prefer a young hotshot coordinator. Not even young. I mean, if it's Raheem Morris, I mean, I don't love Raheem Morris, you know, but he's not young.
Yeah.
I would argue that anybody that is going to demand a certain level of control, Harbaugh, Belichick, Pete Carroll, the problem this franchise has is roster construction. Get a professional in there to do that and get a coach to coach.
Yeah. Yeah. And let someone be the liaison between David Tepper and the penthouse suite and the boys down in the office making the picks.
You got to have somebody. And look, this is ultimately on Tepper more than anybody else. You got to have somebody that can tell that guy no, that can tell that guy go away.
I haven't given up on David Tepper yet. Like, I think he's getting a bad rap in the media. It's hard. It's easy to pile on. You see him doing weird stuff. He's a billionaire, but I think he's just impatient. He's just rich and impatient. He doesn't know how to do this. He's doing it in real time in front of everybody.
The problem is he's rich and impatient, doesn't know how to do this, but believes he does.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Like, to me, the biggest problem we have as a society, is we see billionaire and we assume that guy must know what he's doing. Like, he must be smarter than you. He's got $1 billion. Well, look, man, Dave Tepper made $1 billion in the stock market. And that's not to say it's unimpressive, but the stock market is set up to where if you are winning, the rules make it easy for you to keep winning. Mm-hmm. That is literally the opposite of the NFL. What makes you think that dude knows what he's doing in a football capacity? The other thing, too, is Tepper bought the team from a football guy. Now, granted, there were personal reasons the guy had to go.
Right.
But Richardson was a football guy. And I think that the football people in the building at least respected that the guy knew what he was talking about when he made football observations. I don't think they do with Dave Tepper. And when you say you haven't given up on him, I will agree in the sense that I don't think winning here is impossible. I think that video of him in Jacksonville tells you all you need to know about him as a dude. Like, he's just a garbage human being. Doesn't mean he can't be a good owner eventually. Like, you got to assume none of those guys are good human beings, right?
Right. That's, yeah. Like, all of how you get rich in this country. Yeah.
but I don't know. I guess I have not given up on the idea that the Panthers can win with Dave Tepper as owner. But I also need to see some evidence that they can win for me to completely buy in with him as the owner.
Follow him on Twitter at Dimitri Ravenos. He's got all kinds of different stuff going on. Is the Young Gun podcast continuing on in the offseason with you and Lauren? Or
I think we have decided we will do some special episodes when things of note happen, when the team gets a head coach, once free agency opens. But, like, dude, I'm so worn out by this team. Lauren made the joke with me at one point that, like, you did not know a football team could be this bad, did you? Like, you didn't know that this is what it's like to be a team of anybody or a fan of anybody but Alabama.
Yep.
And I was like, well, you know, Alabama was this way when I was in school. I mean, to me, that is the joy of the Saban era. I was in school to watch Alabama over the course of 4 years have four different head coaches.
Oh, so, you were like during Mike Shula and all that stuff.
Shula's first season was literally my last semester. I was there for the glory days of Mike Price, all 60 of them. And I was there for Franchione, and I was there for DuBose. But it had been a long time since I had experienced that level of, like, hope, not just hopeless football seasons, Dez. Hopeless football games. Like,
yes.
The Panthers broke me this season.
Yes, they got really close.
I can't tell you how many fourth quarters I actually stuck around for this year. The number's low.
Yeah.
And it was hard too, because it'd be like you'd kind of be in and out of it. Like, you know, when you're sitting there and you've got a laptop in front of you or something, you're not really in the game. It felt like that all year, where I'd look up and just be like, well, they're going to turn this over or something's going to happen. And I go back to my laptop again. I'll bring Dimitri back here in a couple of weeks. But, you know, I had to get him in to talk about Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide. We'll see what happens with Alabama going forward. Appreciate you coming through, man.
Yeah, before I run, my colleagues, Joe Ovius and Joe Giglio at OG Triangle Media, they were shocked to learn yesterday that I do not have a Alabama tattoo of any sort. So plans have been made, and a video will be going up in honor of Nick Saban. I will be getting a little Debbie oatmeal cream pie tattooed on my ankle.
Oh, yo, do me a favor. Tell Joe I'm serious. I'm thinking about coming to that Tecmo Super Bowl party they got going on February 4th. Like, I want all the smoke. That was my game. So I'm seriously considering driving down to do that. So let them know I might make an appearance. So appreciate you coming on, Dimitri.
All right, man. Sounds good.
Coming up, B-Dot's going to come through. He's going to pick all the wild card games for NFL Wild Card Weekend here in just a bit. You're watching Franchise Players here on Tobacco Road Sports Radio, youtube.com/@Tobacco Road Sports Radio.
In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Welcome back into Franchise Players here on Tobacco Road Sports Radio. Do us a solid. We're on a mission to get to 5K subscribers on our YouTube channel. We crossed 1,000 subscribers about a month and a half ago. So shout out to everybody that's helped us out with that. Now we're trying to get to 5. So definitely go over, rate, subscribe. All the content that's over there from Franchise Players every Friday, Believe in Panthers with myself and Jonathan Stewart, Skylar Callahan, the Keep Pounding Podcast Network. We got you locked. If you need something for Triad Sports, come over to Tobacco Road Sports Radio, and we got you covered over there. The homie B-Dot strolling through. It's a wild card weekend in the NFL. What's going on, brother? How you doing?
What's good, man? I should have did a better job of promoting myself and put B-Dot right there, but I am him. So every time I'm on one of these, I like to flip him. I've been him Duncan and him Hardaway. So today I'm Timothy Bradley. You dig what I'm saying? Yeah.
I love it. I love it. So I want to go, like I said, we're going to go like Cactus Jack Bang Bang style, like through these. There's 6 of them. Wild card weekend. Some pretty good matchups. I started writing them out. It's like, I didn't realize these matchups were going to be, you know, like right. This. We starting off with a interesting one. Wild card weekend, Saturday, January 13th. The fun's going to start 4:30 p.m. The 5th seed Cleveland at the 4th seed Houston. This is an AFC. This is on NBC and on Peacock. What you got, man?
Listen, first of all, the biggest winner is Peacock. Amen. Like, I don't know. I don't know who Peacock got information on, but they got some high profile games this weekend. But Houston, we have a problem. And that problem to me is that Cleveland's defense. Joe Flacco's been playing out of his mind. Houston is way. I do think they could possibly. This is a playoffs, I think, to frustrate Panthers fans. Yes, yes, yes. So I think all of the people that could hurt Panthers fans will keep moving on.
Oh, jeez. So, like, I should expect San Francisco in the Super Bowl then at this point, probably. San Francisco, Buffalo.
Right, right. I don't know what happened. We went out for a little bit.
Yeah, I think you bounced for a second.
My fault. But we're good, though. Like, I think this year, for this pick, I'm going Hart over here. I'm going Houston. I think it's going down in H-time. You dig what I'm saying? Houston over Cleveland.
Dude, think back to 12 months ago, how we were all just, like, ragging on Houston. Like, the way the franchise was. Remember, Stephen A. was out here like, no African-American should even consider going over there to be a head coach. The way that they've treated everybody. No African-American should go over there and want to play quarterback. And what has happened?
DJ Stroud, DeMarco Ryans, man, like they over there, they've changed the culture of Houston football over there. It's dope. He's got weapons. I got Houston in this one.
All right. So we got Houston advancing on in that one. The next one, Saturday night. This is another one, too. You talk about Peacock knowing some stuff because this is exclusive to Peacock. This might be the best game of the weekend. Six seed Miami at number 3 Kansas City, AFC. They're expecting weather in Kansas City for this matchup. I think the it's supposed to be like 4 degrees or something at kickoff. It's going to feel like negative 27. I just saw a stat on Get Up before we got on here that Tua Tagovailoa has only played in like 4 games under 40 degrees. He's 0-4 in those games. What you got here between Miami and Kansas City?
I thought this would be a great game if it were played in Miami. The fact that it's played in Kansas City with all those, of course, you just mentioned, factors in with the weather, I'm going to give advantage Kansas City. I'm going to think that Patrick Mahomes will pass Aaron Rodgers. They are tied right now with playoff wins, but I think Patrick Mahomes will pass that and get his 12th win over the Miami Dolphins. The thing about the Dolphins is their speed is their strength. And when you're in there in that snow and those conditions of mind feeling like negative 27, you get the running fast, feel like it's a bunch of darts hitting you in the face. That's not a real good experience. You dig what I'm saying? So, like, it's almost where your speed now becomes your nemesis in that situation. I think this is a heavily run game, heavily tight end game. We haven't seen Travis Kelce in a couple weeks. We haven't seen Taylor Swift in a couple weeks. I think all of them come to play this weekend, and the Chiefs advance past Miami.
Yeah, you know, the ones that are complaining, like, I don't want to pay Peacock $5 to watch a game. You're going to force me to watch a game. Monday Night Football has been on ESPN for like 10 years. Like, you've been paying to watch NFL games. Amazon Prime is Thursday. Like, what are you talking about? Like, if you really want to watch this game, you go pay $5.
Luckily, I got the Fire Stick. So hopefully if I just go to that Kansas City Chiefs tab, it'll pop right up for you.
Right there. Be ready to go. B-Dot, what is your follow him on Twitter? At B-Dot, doing the Wild Card Weekend Pick'em. Sunday, January 14th, 2024, 1 p.m. This is an interesting one, too. 7-seed Pittsburgh at number 2 Buffalo. It's on CBS and Paramount Plus. Both these teams, they might be the two, like, hottest teams coming into the playoffs in terms of Pittsburgh feels like they've been on the playoff, like, do-or-die type mode for a couple of weeks now.
They definitely have, man. And big shout to Mike Tomlin. Like, first of all, I want to say I'm rooting for everybody black. Let's be clear. So, Mike Tomlin, I think he's done a great job, man. 17 consecutive seasons.
Yo, they was calling for my boy's head about 5 weeks ago.
They definitely were, man. They definitely were. I think this game is either going to be an upset alert, Steelers win, or a blowout Buffalo win. And I'm leaning towards Buffalo. Only thing being consistent about Pittsburgh is their inconsistency. And that can be an advantage, but in the playoffs, you need to know which side your bread is butter. You dig what I'm saying, Dez? And the Buffalo Bills, they know that. Like, they got a strong run game. Josh Allen, he's probably going to have a turnover or two, but he's also going to score and going to probably throw for 2 touchdowns. You got Diggs over there. I don't know, man. Like, I think, again, if the Steelers upset, it's going to be a close game. But if the Bills get out and play like they know how to play, I think the Bills are going to blow these guys out.
Who's it? Mason Rudolph? Is he playing quarterback for the Steelers right now?
Exactly. You don't even know. And TJ Watt, he's not playing. So, like, you know, that's not as much pressure they can put on Josh Allen. Like, the Steelers have done what they were supposed to do this season. They have overachieved, if you ask me. And big shout to Mike Tomlin and those Steelers. But I really believe the buck stops here.
Yeah, the Steelers would be a fool of an organization to ever let Mike Tomlin go, like, in my opinion.
He better listen. Mike Tomlin better leave when he's ready to leave. Ain't no
issue on his terms. Yeah, because if they fire him, he's gonna get hired before he leaves the parking lot. Like, literally, it's going to be blown up in the elevator. Like, yo, we just heard about Roman Leonard Charlotte real quick.
Well, how does the things happen with you at work today?
Let's talk about it. Let's get to. I know you're ready for this one. NFC Wildcard Weekend, Sunday, January 14th, 4:30 p.m. It's on Fox. The 7-seed Green Bay Packers come into Jerry's World to take on the 2-seed Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott, who honestly should be getting some MVP consideration, I would think, after the season that's now concluded. I was trying to think of the MVP candidates. I'm like, well, Tyreek Hill, Christian McCaffrey. It's like one of those seasons where, like, there's not a lot of quarterbacks that you can really – Lamar, and he'll probably run away with it, to be honest. Now I'm sitting there saying it out loud. But right. Dak should probably be in there too. Green Bay is a sneaky team. Jordan Love is a sneaky dude. He's actually playing really well. Your thoughts on this, Mr. Cowboy fan?
As a Cowboy fan, I want to say this is our year, baby. You dig what I'm saying? Just in the theme of the last 30 years. You dig what I'm saying? But this game, man, again, this is one of sadly, I would like to say, this is an upset alert game for me. This game, to me, could go either way. Like you said, Green Bay's been playing high octane football these last 6-7 weeks, and I know this because I have a husband's chat, nothing but husbands in the chat, and we talk a lot of trash, and there's a Green Bay Packer fan in there, and he talks a lot of his name's Lou, he's just an arrogant Green Bay fan, and he's been talking a lot of junk these last 7 weeks. So I've been paying attention to Green Bay. They got a lot, they're the youngest team in the NFL, which really bodes for their confidence, because you don't know what you don't know. So you go out there and you just play football. You dig what I'm saying? That can be very scary. However, my Dallas Cowboys, we don't lose at home.
Right.
You dig what I'm saying? We are the more, we on paper, we're the better team offensively, defensively, and special teams. If we come out and play like we're supposed to, the way I think we will, I think it may be close for a quarter or so, but I think by the end we put up 40 points and we blow these boys out.
People may not remember it, but they know I'm a Panther fan, diehard. But before the Panthers, my team was the Cowboys. I left the Cowboys in 95 because I finally got a home team in the Panthers. But before that, it was the Cowboys. So I still have a soft spot in my heart for the Cowboys. And luckily or unluckily, the past, I don't know, 6-8 years, I haven't had a chance to root for the Panthers at this time of the year. So my attention usually shifts to who am I going to root for in these playoffs. I think I'm rooting for the Cowboys. It does feel like Stephen A. kind of nailed on the head. I think this is their best chance to get to the Super Bowl in 30 years or whatever it is. Now, you're going to have San Francisco at the very end, but that might take care of itself before you even get there. So, like, we'll just kind of see what happens there. But I like Dallas, especially at home. They really average, like, 35 points a game or something nuts at home. Yeah.
Let me just say this, man. Green Bay, they have Jones, and they've got what's the other running back? Dylan. Like, that's tough. We have to stop that. They don't have Jair Alexander, so CeeDee Lamb should have a great game. It's funny you mentioned how you became a Panthers fan, because that's honestly how I became a Dallas Cowboys fan. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. I was born in St. Louis, Missouri. So growing up, I really didn't have a team until the Rams came back to St. Louis. So I was a St. Louis Rams fan through the Super Bowl and all of that. When they left St. Louis and went to L.A., I denounced my fanship and became a Dallas Cowboys fan.
I can see it, so yeah.
People give me hell about that. They fuzz, oh, how do you pick a Dallas Cowboys? And I tell them all the time, man, I'm a star, baby. You dig? And you can ask my wife about Big D. But that's neither here nor there. I would like to say this in closing. Let me say this in closing. This is the only consolation I have if my Cowboys lose and don't make it to the Super Bowl or don't win the Super Bowl. I hope Jerry Jones fires McCarthy and hires Bill Belichick. That's all.
Wow, really? You'd rather have Belichick than McCarthy?
Belichick is chasing championships. Wow. Belichick needs a team like Dallas. In the teams that's in the playoffs right now, there's no other team whose coach will be on more of a hot seat than Mike McCarthy. And if Bill Belichick wants to go somewhere with a team that's already ready to win, they just need some discipline. And what he can bring to the table is the Dallas Cowboys, another great program, a great organization for him to go to. Bill Belichick as the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys could be top billing.
Damn. And, you know, Jerry's got familiarity with that type of coach and that tree with Bill Parcells. So that could – it just don't feel right to be talking about Mike McCarthy being on the hot seat when he's won, like, 12 games, like 3 years in a row or whatever.
If he doesn't get over the hump to the Super Bowl this season, that is the only consolation. I do want him to let the team go and watch the last time the Packers and the Dallas Cowboys played.
I was thinking,
I just watched it the other night on television. That was don't a catch. That was a catch. That was a catch.
Don't do that to yourself. That's why
that I
don't
was think a catch. He had 3 feet down, and then he reached. And then the next year they changed the rule. If you reach it, this is bullshit.
That's why I don't go back and watch Super Bowl 50. Like, I just, it's going to evoke all these emotions in me. I'm like, nope, not going to do it. It's almost like it didn't even happen. 8 p.m. the nightcap on Sunday night, January 14th, Wild Card Weekend. The 6-seed LA Rams at the 3-seed Detroit Lions. This is on NBC and on Peacock. Peacock got a lot of these games.
Peacock is the winner of the weekend.
What is happening? Like, usually it's like ABC or something that's got the wild card games, but nah, Peacock's like, give them to us. These are two interesting teams. Both of them are teams. I think everybody left the Rams for dead, and Detroit's been like on the rise the past like year or two with Dan Campbell at head coach. The Rams might have the best offense in the league, pound for pound, at the wide receiver, running back, and then Stafford at quarterback. What you got here? Because I'm almost like a toss-up on this one.
This is my game of the weekend. Even as a Cowboys fan, this is my one. Like, it's so many underlying storylines, right? Like, you got Matt Stafford, Jared Goff. They were swapped out for one another. So, like, they were going to opposite teams. Jared Goff was a Detroit Lion. Jared Goff was a Ram. Matt Stafford was a Lion. Detroit is the home that Matt Stafford built. For him to come back into Detroit and to face this now Jared Goff team that feels like that Rams team did him greasy and he could end their season. Mm. Oh, my gosh. I can only imagine what Dan Campbell is saying to them boys in the locker room. The thing you say about that Rams offense, what am I missing something, Dez? What are you thinking?
No, I didn't even think about those storylines with the two quarterbacks.
Oh, man, it's the best storyline. It is the best. Yeah. I love it. Like
after coming home. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that.
Oh, it's amazing, dude. It's amazing. Then you got your Yerm Stud running backs with Gibbs and Montgomery in the backfield for the Lions. Yeah. They control the line of scrimmage there. Then Hutchinson on the defensive side, he's going to give Matt Stafford problems. All of those different storylines are just amazing. You got Amon St. Brown for Detroit. You got Puka Nacua, who's really come off and made you totally forget about Cooper Kupp on that offense. Like, this game is going to be the one. And like you said, it's a toss-up for me. And I have to go with the coach that I prefer. And in this situation, Dan Campbell coaches like I play Madden. Like, he goes for it on fourth. He's going to go for two-point conversions. He's just super aggressive. He wants to put his foot on your neck, and not just put his foot on your neck, but he wants to twist it a little bit. I'm going Dan Campbell at home. First time in the playoffs since 1991 or some foolishness when Barry Sanders was toting that peel. Give me the Lions, man.
Okay. And that actually got me hyped for that game because I wasn't even paying attention to that one. And I was like, that might be the one.
That's my favorite game of the weekend. Okay. I cannot wait for that game.
So I'm going to make plans to make sure at least I'm sitting some orders near Peacock someplace. I'll be able to Peacock. I'm good to go.
They're going to go crazy for the Super Bowl. I can only imagine how many Peacock commercials we're going to see for the Super Bowl.
It is on NBC this year. Yeah, so it'll be on Peacock. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah, they're making a push. Everybody come get Peacock right now. and then the nightcap Monday, or the end of Wildcard Weekend, Monday, January 15th, MLK Day, 8 p.m. I don't know what happened to Philadelphia. The 5-seed Philadelphia Eagles at the 4-seed Tampa Bay Buccaneers, led by Baker Mayfield on ABC and ESPN. Who you got in this one?
This is my upset game, man. Like, Baker Mayfield has something to prove. And I told folks, Baker, like about 6-7 weeks ago, I said, yo, he's found something in those receivers, dog, that he's never had before. He didn't have it in Cleveland. He didn't have it in Charlotte. Like, he's got some weapons down there. And Baker Mayfield, this is like the best season he's ever had fun-wise. I know he's been to the playoffs before, but he didn't go to the playoffs with an arsenal like he has in Tampa Bay. A defense that's strong, a team that's, you know, just a couple of years removed from a Super Bowl appearance and a Super Bowl win with Tommy. I really like Tampa Bay to do the thing this weekend that's going to shock the world, and that's upset the team that is the NFC defending champions. Philadelphia, they just gone on a slope downward, and it sucks to see. You don't know what they're going to do from game to game. You don't know if Jalen Hurts is going to be accurate or if he's going to be throwing the ball all over the field. A.J. Brown's not playing. Julio Jones, you can't depend on him. Like, it's just so many inconsistencies with Philadelphia. And that gadget play of we're going to get all the tush push or the brotherly shove, like folks aren't afraid of that anymore. You dig what I'm saying? Because in order for that to work, we have to do something. Like, we have to give you a first and goal from the one on a defensive pass interference or something. Make the Eagles play for real and drive down the field, and they don't have many options to do that tush push. And then it shows their inconsistencies. But I think this is my upset game. It might be a little bit of me hoping it's an upset game because I absolutely hate the Philadelphia Eagles. But I do think that Baker Mayfield and them Bucks can get it done at home.
Oh, man, because I'm trying to think of, like, so out of the picks you did, like, what that would do for next week, but I forgot the NFL. Their
seat. I was trying to do that math, too.
But yeah, I don't even know what. Because I'm kind of rooting for the Cowboys. So I'm like, okay, if that goes that way, then I think it would be. It'd be like Detroit versus Tampa, and it'd be who's the other? San Fran versus – yeah, actually, no. It'd have to be the other way around. I don't know.
I think it would be
us. They would have the lowest seed. San Francisco would get the lowest seed left. So that would be Tampa at that point. Off your picks.
Don't give me the line.
Yeah.
To be quite honest, I really don't care. In my opinion, the Super Bowl goes – the NFC goes through San Francisco. The AFC goes through Baltimore. And quite honestly, if those two teams were in the Super Bowl, I would not be upset about that Super Bowl, nor would I be surprised about that Super Bowl. Of course, I'm rooting for my Cowboys, and I think we do have the weapons, but there are certain things that we just don't have. We don't have a strong running game, and you need that in the playoffs. Tony Pollard.
I am curious about that. Yeah,
he hasn't 100 yards, but like once this season, man, like you have to have a strong running game, and we're just too undisciplined. You know, we have too many penalties when we really don't need them, and that's not a championship team.
I feel like Derrick Henry is going to be in a Cowboy uniform next year.
I would love it. Can you imagine Derrick Henry and Bill Belichick?
Imagine the media. Can you imagine Stadium?
We bet Mortimer. We're back.
Follow him on Twitter at B-Dot. Enjoy the wild card weekend, my man. And hey, yo, Carolina, baby, we outside. We back outside again.
Let me tell you something, man. Numbers look so good, dog. Six man telling you right now, get your popcorn, get your tickets. This team will be one of the final eight for sure. And once you get to that eight, it's up to the, you know how that goes. But I definitely think this team, once they figure it out, Cormack, once he finally gets his rhythm and his stroke,
he's getting there.
I don't doubt it's going to show up. Mm-hmm. He's 25 years old. He's a grown ass.
Yeah, he's a grown man.
He knows where it is now. I like the way HD is sort of transitioning out that big traditional Carolina type basketball with Armando. Still allowing him to get his double doubles, but also getting Jalen Washington a lot more active, showing you what the future of Carolina basketball bigs will look like. I believe. I just really like the makeup of this team. Elio, he's starting to figure it out. RJ is player of the year. As far as I'm concerned, like this team is stacked.
I was telling a friend of mine, because they were arguing with me that it was kind of like a Roy Williams roster. I'm like, no. This is a Dean Smith roster. This isn't a Roy. Roy would have two big men running at all times on the floor. Like, this is a Dean roster where he's got that J.R. Reed, James Worthy, Antoine Jameson type power forward that can back you down, can shoot, can rebound, can do all the little utility things. That's Harrison Ingram. Like,
dude, Harrison, look, double nickel has been amazing.
He's insane, man. I love him.
If he just hit his damn free throws, totally messed up my parlay the other night. I needed him to have over 11 points. He missed four free throws. I sent him a DM about it. I said, damn it.
I gotta get you out of here. David Glenn coming in here just a little bit for the sports buff.
DG, I love you, DG.
Always a pleasure, my brother. Thank you for coming through.
Anytime, bro.
David Glenn coming up next for the Sports Buffet. We're actually going to talk about that Carolina team and Duke and Scott Fitter and a whole lot of more. You're listening and watching Franchise Players here on youtube.com/@TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.
Franchise players are often referred to as the face of the franchise.
We are on a mission to get to 5,000 subscribers. Shout out to everyone who's joined us on Tobacco Road Sports Radio's YouTube channel, youtube.com/@TobaccoRoadSportsRadio. We crossed over 1,000 subscribers, I believe, back in October, if I'm not mistaken. Now the goal is 5. So if you ever listen to anything, watch anything on Tobacco Road's programming, covering everything from Panthers to ACC hoops, college football, pro wrestling, and more, definitely give us a shout out, rate, subscribe us, like us. Subscribe to the YouTube channel over there and help us get to 5,000 subscriptions. Shout out to B-Dot, just came through, gave us his wild card weekend predictions, and OG Triangle Media's Dimitri Ravanos, who came through to talk about the legacy of Nick Saban. Joining us now, his bi-weekly joint through franchise players, David Glenn from the NC Sports Network. You can go follow his work at ncsportsnetwork.com and follow him on Twitter at David Glenn Show. What's going on, DG?
I'm doing great, Des. Good to be with you again.
So I'm going to hit Sports Buffet. We kind of banned it last week, but there's so much stuff that happened in this week in sports. I'm going to kind of go kind of backwards from we're doing this on Friday. I'm going to kind of go all the way back to Monday by the time we're done with this. But I want to start off midweek, and let's hit hardwood ACC hoops action. 7th seed UNC takes out NC State and Raleigh on Wednesday night. 14th ranked Duke blew out Pittsburgh on the road. Are these two Final Four contenders in your mind after what you've seen so far?
Well, if you make the list a dozen or more, then I do think Duke and Carolina both belong on that list of top Final Four candidates. And I'll tell you, I was at that State Carolina game. The Tar Heels did several things against the Wolfpack, and they deserve credit, Des. There are not a lot of teams that are going to go on the road against Pitt, against Clemson, against NC State, and come away with three wins. The favored team on the road is going to get upset a lot in the ACC this year. And the Tar Heels just went on the road and had a pretty impressive three-game sweep against solid or even better opponents. But the Tar Heels defended better than at any time last season. They just absolutely shut down the Wolfpack. I know Kevin Keats said it wasn't really anything the Tar Heels did. His guys just missed a lot of shots. No, his guys missed some open shots, but it was also a lot about what the Tar Heels did defensively. And the other big thing is that they handle the ball a lot better. The RJ Davis, Caleb Love combination simply did not work for a lot of different reasons. One of them was ball handling. Elliot Cadeau is a true point guard. And when RJ Davis is just asked to complement a true point guard, Well, State did the full court press for almost the entire game, and it rarely bothered the Tar Heels. And the third thing the Heels do now that they just didn't do much of last year is they share the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
The ball doesn't stick. Everybody is a potential assist, almost everybody, waiting to happen. And they're just unselfish. They're physically and mentally tougher than they were last year. And yes, the Tar Heels and the Blue Devils, for different reasons, are the ACC's top two contenders once again. In Duke's case, they've got one of the best players in the league in Kyle Filipowski, one of the best senior guards in the league in Jeremy Roach. And I think, you know, having the young guards come along little by little has been a huge step in the right direction for John Shire's team, because when you have Caleb Foster and Jared McCain coming along the way that they have, that is an absolute prerequisite for Duke to get to where it wants to go this year. You know, they have other guys that have to keep getting better, but we're back to where we've often been in ACC basketball, and that's with Carolina and Duke leading the way.
You know, and both teams are deep. Like, their rosters are deep. They, and both coaches play deep into their rosters. I was just talking to B-Dot. He was on the segment before you, of unofficial sixth man of Carolina basketball. And I was telling him, this isn't – I had a friend who was telling me that this was a Roy Williams type of roster. I'm like, it's not. It's a Dean Smith roster. Roy has two big men on the floor at all times that can run back and forth. That's not what this roster is. This roster is a 10-deep. He's got a power forward like a – and we've talked about like a J.R. Reed, Antoine Jameson, James Worthy type of power forward, that 6'8", 6'9", can do a little bit of everything. Harrison Ingram had 19 rebounds on a Wednesday night. Like, that's him. Harrison Ingram is that part. And Zaden High is getting minutes for UNC. Like, I thought that would trail off as we got into conference play. Hubert's playing 10 dudes. Like, he's playing 10 guys off of this roster. And Shire's doing the same thing. And it feels like Filipowski is starting to kind of get his feet underneath him, because I do believe he's probably going to be ACC Player of the Year when this is all said and done. And I do think that they'll go as far as Flip can take them. The Duke-Carolina games, maybe for the first time since, I don't know, 2019, where we might see both of them ranked when they see each other here in a little bit. So that's good stuff. Now, the rest of the league is kind of messing it up. Like, I don't know, like, there's a pack, Miami – Wake is still right there at the top, and yeah, State's still right there too, but their schedules are much weaker than what Duke and Carolina played in non-conference. Don't know what to do with Miami. Who was it that lost? Was it Miami that lost to Louisville?
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know what to do with the ones in the middle here that people were thinking were going to make a move, and the kind of Clemson, you know, like those teams, I don't trust them. I think in the end it's going to come down to what we always know, which is Duke, Carolina, and then kind of everybody else.
So there's a half a dozen teams that could go either way, right? Yeah. I mean, Clemson has looked really good at times, but now the Tigers are 1-3 in conference play. I actually still think Clemson will bounce back and become an NCAA tournament team. I think Steve Forbes at Wake Forest has a great chance of having his first NCAA tournament team with the Demon Deacons. But you're right. A lot of these teams are unpredictable. I mean, Virginia is great defensively again and well-coached under Tony Bennett again. But, man, when they lose by a lot, and they just can't get anything going offensively at UVA. So I think coaching is going to come into play, team chemistry, who stays healthy, who wins their close games. I still think the ACC will end up with 4 or 5 NCAA tournament teams, but it does not look like a vintage year for the league as a whole. But as you said at the start there, it is fun to see Carolina and Duke playing 8, 9, sometimes 10 guys, because remember, Hubert Davis last year, there are more than 360 Division I men's basketball teams, and Hubert Davis was ranked about 357th in using his bench. I mean, that's how extreme it was a year ago. And right now, I think Jalen Washington is a dynamic offensive big man for the Tar Heels. Seth Trimble is a lot better than he was a year ago. I wasn't sure he'd be able to contribute.
He definitely lifted weights.
He's a defender.
He's been lifting weights in the summer for sure.
Oh, he's a slasher. He's a driver. He'll even hit an occasional three. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Zaden High as another kind of bouncy, athletic big man. That is a deeper Carolina team, and I think that just helps the Tar Heels' margin for error a little bit.
Let's go over to the NFL Monday, Bloody Monday in the NFL. Panthers finally relieved general manager Scott Fitter of his duties after finishing the season 2-15, where the beginning of the season was so filled of optimism. We were quarterback away, and it turns out that was not the case. If you were hired, David Glenn, as the Panthers general manager, what is the very first thing you would do on day one?
Well, I would have an opinion on whether I thought Bryce Young was the guy. And this is going to be fascinating to watch because there's a little bit of chicken and the egg going on. If you're David Tepper and your favorite general manager candidate during the interview process says, I think y'all made a mistake with Bryce Young. What do you do then? Do you eliminate that guy as a potential GM? Which comes first?
Oh, boy.
If you think he's the best GM and he doesn't like your quarterback, wow, you've got a real reboot on your hands. Mm. Or do you interview 8 to 10 GMs and you only take one of those? And of course, it's going to be a divided group, right? Maybe 6 of the 10 say Bryce Young is the guy. You just didn't have enough around him and you have these great defensive pieces. I think we can make this thing happen. To me, that's David Tepper's biggest challenge because we've already seen that at least the appearance of he has hired some consulting firm type people I think as a smart man, I know everybody's down on David Tepper right now. He is a smart guy who wants to win, whatever you think of his mistakes. And I think it's a good sign that he's hiring these outside consulting agencies that are basically forced to make him look at how he screwed up previous decisions. And most smart people I know, even if they're powerful, when they fail, they are more willing to listen than they were the previous times. And I think he's just too smart to just be a bull and stubborn and kind of just be the bull in the china shop in this whole double hiring process. I mean, you need a coach while everybody, you know, what, 7 other teams need a coach, although some are filled. You need a GM. I mean, his days are filled with interviews right now, Dez. They're going to interview 20 plus people, it looks like, when you combine coach and GM. And it's just hard. It's like trying to build a bridge when you're not sure. One leg of the bridge is the GM and another leg of the bridge is the coach. And another leg of the bridge is which quarterback you think is your guy.
Oh my gosh.
And you got to do all that at the same time. It's tricky.
I will say this, though, because I agree with you. I'm kind of starting to push back on this narrative that David Tepper is this deranged, meddling owner. Like, I think the narrative kind of got away from what the actual truth is. I do believe that he thought that he could buy a championship, that he could come in and do it a certain way and get it done in a certain manner of time, be efficient with it, and it looked like nothing. And I think he's starting to realize you can't do that, as other owners in the past have as well, when they come into the NFL and realize it's not trading stocks, it's not buying real estate, or, you know, whatever it was that got you your money in the first place. This is a different type of animal. And to his defense, everyone talks about how he's so trigger happy when it comes to firing coaches. He's really tried different methods each time when he's hired a coach, because Matt Rhule, he gave him complete football operations. He kept fresh out of college on a long 7-year contract. Like, who does that? Like, no, everyone was complaining about all that and they forget now. And he gave him about 2.5 years to see if it was going to work before he pulled the rug out from underneath him. The next actual hire he had was Frank Wright. And even then, look what he did. He surrounds him with the best minds he thinks are possible in all these other roles around Frank Wright. He just didn't have the right CEO in the middle at Frank Wright. Frank Wright just, it felt like there was no main voice, I guess. And that was the problem this year. And he yanks it after 12 games because he realizes that it's not going to work. This time around, he gets the hiring firm. And he didn't have that the first 2 times. So he's done it differently each time. It's not like he's banging his head against the wall trying the same thing. And people kind of lose sight of that. So I'm trying to take it easy on Tepper a little bit, because it's like he's brand new. He's never done this before. And I'm hoping he's got to get this right, because the Panthers are my team. And if he doesn't, I don't know what's going to happen to me and my sanity if we keep doing seasons like this.
I'll tell you this real quickly. When I'm dead and buried, if you tell me that the worst thing I ever did was throw the remaining ice cubes of a drink at somebody who was cursing at me from 10 yards away. I mean, I didn't hit him with a hammer.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't murder anybody. I didn't physically...
You didn't jump out the booth.
I didn't put hands on... Was it a smart thing to do? Of course not. Is it a stupid thing to do? Of course, yes. But the previous Panthers owner was accused of racism and bigotry and misogyny and some pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
And David Tepper has never been accused of such things, to my knowledge. So, again, what he did was wrong. And also, oh, by the way, if it's true that he's been getting rid of people behind the scenes who disagree with him, some people say he has fallen into that trap that a lot of powerful people do. They hire you and tell you to be, they want you to be honest and transparent. And then if you disagree too often, they fire you. I've seen that in my life as an attorney, as a business owner. I don't think if he's truly doing that, well, then that is another mistake by him. But I don't think the guy should automatically be declared a horrible human being because of his over-emotional reaction as a competitor while probably being taunted from his owner's box. Again, do I justify it? Of course not. But there are a lot worse things than what he did in the heat of the moment there.
Running up against the end here of Franchise Players for Friday, January the 12th, 2024. Real quick before I get you out of here, though, with the Pats moving on from Bill Belichick and Nick Saban retiring from Alabama, who is in more trouble going forward, the New England Patriots or the Alabama Crimson Tide?
I'll say the Alabama Crimson Tide, and I don't mean in trouble in the longer haul. I mean just in the shorter term. I think Jerod Mayo, the new guy with the Patriots, is a huge step in the right direction. Robert Kraft seemingly has had his eye on him as an up-and-coming coaching candidate for quite some time, and obviously he knows the Patriot way. There's a chance for that to be a smoother transition. Alabama has everything you could possibly need to win. Tradition, history, facilities, fan base, big, deep pockets. But as the old saying goes, I'd rather be the guy that follows the guy who follows Nick Saban.
We're seeing all these coaches go, no, we don't want that job. Yeah.
His immediate successor, that, you know, we have the UCLA basketball exam after John Wooden a long time ago, took a whole bunch of wrongs to finally get it right, if they ever got it right.
The last time the legend left Alabama, when Bear Bryant left it, went through a little period of time where they weren't really Alabama, you know, until Saban got there, you know, Stallings won one, if I'm not mistaken. But other than that, yeah, I'm kind of expecting, like you said, I'm kind of expecting Alabama to kind of, yeah, I think it's Georgia's world now. Like Georgia's the king of the SEC, king of the planet. And we'll see what happens to Alabama. But I'm up against it. We're right here at the end of time. Follow DG on Twitter at David Glenn Show. Follow his work at ncsportsnetwork.com. New articles, new episodes of David Glenn Show you can find on their YouTube channel. Just search NC Sports Network. Appreciate you being on, DG.
Thanks, Dez. Always good to be with you, man.
And that's it for Franchise Players for Friday, January the 12th, 2024. Again, rate, subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@TobaccoRoadSportsRadio. We'll see you next week.